This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about, so you're retired, now what? Or maybe I'm considering retirement, now what? How do I do it? Okay, and to lead us in that discussion is Mike Townsend, and he's the president of, you pronounce it, because I always mess it up.
Carpe Diem Coaching.
And you have this great, your website, too. Do your website. I love your website.
www.mybestdayistoday.com.
Man.
Thanks for asking.
No, I like that. I wonder if anybody's approached you about buying it because it, for what you do, it's really, really great. Anyway, so Michael's going to, I guess, coach us off the ledge, and John's going to explain how to get on the ledge. John Elliott, federal benefit strategist.
Get on the ledge.
In other words, you know all about, you know, how to explain how things work, and somebody might go, okay, I'm going to get on the ledge to jump off. I don't mean jump off the building, but jump off the ship. Yeah.
Okay.
And John used to be a seminar presenter with us and used to be with the federal government, but has retained all that knowledge. So he can explain benefit. And actually, we got an email already on a benefit issue regarding retirement. So we'll get to that in a little bit.
Okay.
All righty. So, Michael, so you retired. Now what? Or so you want to retire. Now what? So you have this great outline, and your first bullet point is, first, let's define retirement. What is the concept?
Well, that's, I think, one of the first things that everybody who's getting close to retirement ought to get comfortable with. Because the definition has changed over time, and the reality of retirement has changed. And from the days of our parents and grandparents when you got your gold watch and you put up a hammock in the backyard and got your six-pack of your best buds along with you, and you called that retirement. And you basically retreated from the world. That was a time that's past. And today, people are retiring. First of all, they're not necessarily younger in chronological age when they retire, but they're retiring into a reality that is very different. The first thing that's different is that when they retire, they can look forward to a much longer period of retirement than any of our ancestors, or most any. The fact is that we're healthier. We're living longer. Healthcare is indeed better. And as a result, there can be 30 or more years of retirement. I've met several people recently who have told me they're federal retirees who have told me that they've been retired longer than they worked.
Really?
For the government. And they have had to get very creative during those years in order to enjoy those years. So
our listening audience, and now as a firm, we've been around 28, close to 29 years now, and we do beginning, mid, and pre-retirement seminars, but the group of mid-career enthusiasts, if you will, is growing. They're even in the pre-retirement sometime. Is there any time, I won't say too early, but you know, you're not going to be planning retirement if you just started into the workforce, but do you find many people, say, mid-career, thinking about, what am I going to do?
I do. Yeah. I get questions pretty constantly from people that are at the 15-plus year, up to, say, 25 years in that window, who are federal employees in particular. And what they are trying to do is set a definition for what their retirement will be like so that they can do things. And I think it's very smart, because then they can do things to prepare themselves for that time period. And I'll give you some examples. There's a fellow with NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that came to see me, and he still has 5 or 6 more years before he's even eligible. However, he had attended one of the workshops and then met with me privately afterwards and said, I've almost finished my degree in the time I've been with the government. I have a pretty good job, but I'd like to be a teacher. I always wanted to do that. And so I said to him, all right, what would you need in order to be a teacher? What are you missing? And he said, well, certainly the bachelor's and probably a master's in order to get the teaching certifications and so forth. I said, well, that sounds very smart. And the good news is you have another 8 or 9 at least years to take care of those things and to sort of knock them off one by one and get yourself ready for that. And by the way, I recommended to him to additionally spend some time with teachers. In other words, get to know some of the teachers for his own kids. Go and meet those teachers. Tell them your plan and ask them what are the things that you should be doing to get prepared. I think that's an important thing for anybody who has a dream to make it a reality. Find someone who lives that dream and find out what they recommend that you can do in order to be prepared for that. So, and that's just what I'll give you several examples as we go through the morning. But that kind of preparation is the sort of pre-retirement activities that people are doing. But notice, it all starts with a dream. It starts with clarifying, and therein lies the rub. For some people, and perhaps some of the listeners are saying to themselves, well, that all sounds good, but suppose I don't want to be a teacher. How do I figure out what to do? And there are steps to take. It's a lot of introspection involved, but there are some things that we can do, and I have some specific recommendations, in fact, for anybody that feels that they're just not sure what the next part of their life would be like, and would like to be clear about it. There's a wonderful website, livecareer.com. At that website, they have lots of good information on careers in general, and it's a pretty broad spectrum. But one of the things they offer that I have done also, just because I try to take the medicine that I dose out to others, which is they have some tests available that are called career assessment tests. You can take them online. It costs a couple bucks. It's not much, $25, $30, something like that. It used to be free, but I heard that they're charging a few dollars now.
Who isn't?
A big surprise, yeah. Yes. The free web world is no longer free. Anyhow, there's a big shock.
Except us.
Except us, of course. That being said, that test results in, it has nothing to do with what we know. It has nothing to do with our education or our experiential backgrounds. It measures our likes and dislikes, our style, what psychologists call style, the way we like to operate in the world. And at the end, after we've taken the whole test, it self-scores while you wait, and it gives you a list of, I think, 5 to 10 career areas that people who score the way you score generally report that they enjoy those careers. And you want to look at what are those top 4 or 5. And if what you do already and have been doing is in those 5, good for you. You've probably had a fairly happy career. But it also lists the bottom 4 or 5 things that we ought to stay away from if we scored that way, because people report that they are very unhappy doing those. And I actually do know people that have taken it and they find their job down there. And we all know how that happens. Well, that's not the point of taking this. The point is to see the top few. And it doesn't mean you have to do those things either. But what it does is give us options. And then my recommendation, I tell all my audiences, is that's when the work starts, is when you have some options. Because now is the time to do research on those career fields. Best kind of research, again, is to find somebody that does whatever that is. And people are amazingly generous, I've found. And so asking people for a little bit of time to talk to them about their career, most people have enough of an ego that they will do that, especially, which I have done with people, both going in both directions. And it's amazing what people will do for a cup of Starbucks. And so you buy them a cup of coffee and you pick their brain. How have you enjoyed this career? How did you get into it? What are the pluses? What are the minuses? Now, here's a little bit about my background. Somebody like me, how would I get into that if I wanted to, et cetera, et cetera. And then you really can come away with a more informed view of that career field. And when you find one and you think to yourself, yeah, that's what I want to do. I don't know how I can get there while I'm still in government service. Maybe you can. But if you can't, then hold your horses, because once we retire, we can reinvent ourselves. That's what people are doing. They're reinventing themselves, but hopefully into the thing or things to do that really are what they are going to enjoy doing, whether they're paid for it or not.
We had an email last week, and it was, I guess, a frustrated email with furloughs impacting one's income. And the email was, I have X, Y, and Z saved up. What do you think? Can I afford to retire? Well, of course, you got to look from the bottom up. What do you spend? But it was interesting that because of the frustration, they were thinking of just leaving. Now, how do you talk that person off of the proverbial ledge, the real ledge? I mean, they're just going to jump and because they're mad.
Sure.
I can understand it, but what would you tell that person? Now, wait a minute, have you considered?
Sure.
You fill in the blank. I'm lost here.
Yeah, you know, I have spent a career as an industrial psychologist and as a caring human being who I've heard a lot of scenarios about people in their jobs, good things and not so good things. Generally speaking, I don't think ever it's a good idea to leave something because it got bad. I think it's best to leave something because you're going to something that makes more sense to you. So it's a movement from one thing to another. Now, in pulling the cord for retirement, that is a complex question that involves information that's necessary relative to what are the financial aspects, which if they attend one of the workshops that that describes and tells them how to calculate what their benefits will render in a net per month, that's important to know, especially when you compare it, as you said a moment ago, to what the retired costs will be. They could be higher. They're usually lower, but they could be higher. And so that's one, but that's only one aspect. The other aspect has to do with satisfaction with what we're doing. And one of the things that I have encouraged people to do is this, two words, pay attention. Pay attention to the degree of stress that is on a consistent basis, not incidental, meaning it's a one-time event, but over time, are we experiencing stress that is eating away at us? And people generally know if that's the case. Often they don't want to admit that that's what's really going on. If that's what's happening for a person, I have asked them to put that into the calculation. And here's why. The number one killer in America is stress. Beyond, far and away, past everything else. In fact, and all the diseases and things that come from living in a stressful situation, we just simply die sooner. We can't sustain levels of stress. So therefore, I said it was a complicated calculation, because part of it, we ought to get professional advice. Well, I don't mean we need to go to a shrink necessarily, but we certainly need to talk to our doctor. We need to see if our blood pressure is up over a consistent basis, and then ask ourselves the question, is that just because I'm eating too many fried foods? Or is it because I am saddled with a situation, the boss, or with a work situation in which I am constantly on the losing end or something like that? And pay attention to that. Meaning, that goes into the calculation, I think. We have to find a balance. There are other considerations, and most of them are covered, by the way, I'm told very nicely, in all the portions of the retirement preparation workshops. It looks at all these factors.
You mean NITP's workshops?
Of course. I didn't know there
were
any
others.
There is
only one. Okay. Yeah.
And a little momentary plug. But know this, that we go beyond simply the numbers, because the question is more than just numbers. It is this notion of how much do I want to accomplish? Am I still relevant? Some of the stress that's caused in jobs comes from a descending or degrading of relevance. People tell me that, and I'm not going to say names of agencies when I say this. There are some particular agencies where I hear it more often than in others, but where people say, gosh, my job used to be more important. Gosh, what the agency does used to mean something different. And we have slippage in our mission. We have slippage in my job. And I'm no longer doing the stuff that used to excite me, and so forth. Again, there's another consideration to put into the mix.
All right, let's open up the phone lines. It's 10:23 a.m. It is March 18th, day after St. Paddy's Day, and we're talking a.m. Eastern Time, and we'll be on for another 35 minutes. And after that, don't call us, because we won't be here. but please call us at 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. And we're concentrating this morning on, so you retired now, what preparation there too, either in the short term or the medium term. And you just talked about some great websites and whatnot, but we could also talk about benefit issues, and we do have an email on that. And if we want to do a little tax of finance, we could do that too. But our focus is on Michael's field of expertise. You were talking before about somebody saying, okay, you know, I really like this, but I might want to do this and taking this test. And they have, over the years, I've heard of these different tests to find your wheelhouse, so to speak. And the stress level, your comment about the stress level is, it is the silent killer from what I read. It isn't, somebody doesn't die of stress, but they sometimes die of stress in, what would you say? Incurred issues that generate bad things. But so you're going to make us stress-free, at least for the hour, and then we'll go back to what we do. But what do we take out of the show, Michael, to help us after the hour? You know, all this sounds great, but then they're going to go, oh, yeah. But how does one set a mental alarm clock to follow your good advice?
Well, let me address what I think are the top three questions. So the three questions that are asked of me most often by people who are considering when, not if they can, but when they can. When should they?
I messed up. I didn't give the phone number. 202-465-3080. Maybe I did. 202-465-3080. I'm sorry, Michael. Keep going.
Quite okay.
God, what do you do for senility?
Yeah. Okay, we're coming to that. The three questions that are most often asked are, first of all, people tell me that they are concerned about retiring because they think it's this is the phrase I hear, the beginning of the end. And there was a lady at one of the agencies in the last 6 months who I thought put it very eloquently. She said to me, "You know, Mike, one of the reasons that I am reluctant to retire is that I'm fully eligible and have been for a while, but I see retirement as the title of the last chapter of my life." I thought that was very eloquently put. And I said, "Well, then, is that why you're hesitating?" She said, "Absolutely." I said, "Well, why?" She said, "Because we all know how the chapter ends." and we, you know, got a good laugh from the group. But I understand her point. What I did not do, though it was tempting, was to call her on the logic, since, logically, therefore, she's suggesting that if you never retire, you'll live forever.
Actually, wasn't there a study that said if, and you would know better than I, but I thought I read this years ago, that the sooner you retire, the longer you live, and the people that do not retire tend to die sooner than the people who retired earlier.
Yes. Yeah.
Are there any variables to that, or is that is that stating?
No, there was an AARP study about 3 years ago. That's probably the one you saw.
Perhaps.
or saw the reporting on it, in which that was essentially the conclusion that and it was inverse to logic. We would have thought that they might have lived longer if they worked longer and prepared themselves. There have been some studies that have said that. But I think the reality is that as long as we retire when we're ready to retire, we really have given it thought and we're going from something to something else. We have to see that clearly. It's not just we're heading for the hammock, but we clearly have something in mind that we're going to, and that something or set of somethings is going to allow us to remain vital. It's going to allow us to remain engaged, and we're going to have purpose. Without purpose, without a sense that there's a reason that I'm here, there's a reason I keep going, without that, I think that is the trigger for our body to begin shutting everything down, because it figures, you're done with this, like that. I don't know the medical evidence behind that. That is anecdotal. However, I believe there is some.
Well, that may be some reason why people don't live for prolonged periods once they go into a nursing home.
Excellent. Excellent point.
Yeah.
Yep.
May I ask a question?
Please do.
All right. Let's say that I like, tolerate, really like my job. I listen to these shows. I'm somewhat close to the age, or I'm at the age I could retire. And many people over the years, they spend an awful lot of time planning what they're not going to do anymore, rather than what they are going to do. With today's economic environment, there's more of a comment, well, maybe I'll put up with it longer because I need another year in service to help my retirement, another year with the TSP, another year to plan. How about forgetting the money side and the job side? What could I do while I'm still maintaining my job? I want my job. I don't hate it. I'd like to stay with it. I think I have an idea of what I'm going to do, but what could I do after hours? Now, you can't have two full-time jobs, and you can't do this, whatever it's going to be, 5 days a week after the job, because then you'll be unhappy maybe with both. But do you ever deal with people who say, well, I don't want to get on that train right now, and especially with finances, what they are today, and I don't know what's happened today. I don't know if you all heard that Cyprus wanted to go in and levy everybody's bank accounts by 6%. Just take the money out. But it has to pass. It has not passed. But, you know, you start hearing that, and you go, oh, my goodness, how's that going to affect my overseas investments? How's that going to affect me here, et cetera, et cetera? I need to stay on the job. But I want to. I would think if they had, if you will, a little bit clearer head, I should talk about what they're doing. Then it could be really happy with both. So how can we work part-time into this, doing volunteer work or taking that test? And I like that idea of taking that test.
Yeah.
Well, do you ever work with folks like that are just, you know, I don't want to leave, but I want to be happier.
Sure. I got two thoughts about that.
Okay.
Only two.
I figured you would.
One, certainly, to pick up on the scenario you've described, that when a person, if we have the time and the energy and we can find a way to do a little test, so to speak, if for a few months or even make a year commitment, something like that, to do something on a part-time basis that is what we think we will do when we're retired. It is that activity, whether we're volunteering it or we're actually getting paid for it or what have you, as long as it doesn't add to our stress, with that caveat. I would say that's a great idea. I know people that have done it, and they feel that they get a very, very realistic preparation then for that work. Now, having said that, there is another consideration that I ask all my audiences to think about, which is in terms of looking out to the when should I retire. Part of this comes from my own experience of retiring in my early 60s, when I was five more years yet, I thought, before I would retire. But as I, at that time, I was a vice president with a major corporation, human resources, and everything seemed to be going just fine. And I got sick. I got very sick. And it was the first time in my life. I'd never broken a bone, never had any illness to speak of. And I was in my office sitting at my desk and couldn't stand up. And it came on very suddenly. And so I thought, like most guys, well, this will pass just if I sit here long enough. Fortunately, one of my staff members came in and she saw me and picked up the phone and dialed 911. What I found out was I had sat there at my desk and had a stroke. That stroke did not cause paralysis. They kept me in the hospital for many hours waiting for it to begin, but it didn't. No slumping, nothing happened. And they said, well, you dodged the bullet on this one, my friend. I had to have a little heart surgery because something was amiss, and they found it. And that's the good news. Now, I tell you that by way of setting up my thought pattern at that point, because I had a long recovery from the open heart surgery, which allowed me time to think. And it was time to think about what I would do. My plan for becoming a professor and going into the sunset, going back and finishing my PhD, which I've threatened to do a number of times in my life, never have, and so forth, that all went by the wayside. And I thought, well, if those things aren't doable, what is? I created another dream for myself to be a writer and to be a lecturer, a speaker, that sort of thing. But that's it. That's what I wanted to do. And then I asked myself the question, well, when will I do that? And I thought back to years and years ago when I worked for NGA, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, where I remembered a fella who worked there who had been there forever. Had his 50-year medallion. That's how long he had been there. And this fellow retired one day. He was in my division, or the division I was in. He retired one day. It was a wonderful thing that we all were happy for him and sent him off. And he had been gone less than 30 days when the call came in. Mm. And reported he'd had a massive heart attack and died. And this fella, and by the way, as the word spread around our division from office to office and cube to cube, I will remember the person coming to my cube to make sure I had heard, and so forth. And that when she did, I'll never forget how she leaned into the cube conspiratorially, like, I don't know why, since she had just said the same thing to everyone else, but she leaned in and she said to me, "Mike, you know, he never saw his first check. He never got it." Which, in 30 days, that probably, we'll never know for sure, but that's probably true. But it was the impact of that statement that came back to me while I thought, laying there at a mere 62 years of age, thinking to myself, wait a minute, what am I waiting for? What exactly is going to happen? But I was able to put into my calculation for the first time, honestly, I said to myself, are you going to live long enough, you old fat thing? Are you going to live long enough to enjoy your retirement? You don't know. I don't know. And that's the truth. I don't know.
Are you enjoying it now?
I am loving it now. I went ahead and pulled the cord. I retired, pulled together the different retirement plans that I had, bought myself an annuity. Well, I didn't buy it, but my financial advisor had bought an annuity for me. That plus my Social Security. Yes, I pulled the trigger on that at 62. Why? Because I said, you can say till you're blue in the face, Susie Orman, that I should wait till 67 or 70, but I don't know that I'll be alive
that
long.
How do you really feel, Michael?
So are we getting the point here? Yeah. That's the journey I went through. And I know that's not everybody's journey, but I think if we ignore those kinds of realities, that it is to our detriment. And it has made a difference to me because I went ahead and did it. And probably, yes, have a net coming in each month, far less certainly than an executive with a Fortune 100, but it's enough. And it's enough to enjoy my life, to spend my time writing, to spend my time lecturing occasionally. And like right now, I even get to go on the radio every now and then.
All right.
And I wouldn't if I were still doing that.
This really leads into this email that came in this morning. It's more on John's subject, but it spins off of what you just talked about. And the person that wrote in was kind enough to say, I like listening to your shows, and thanks for the info. So he had a question. Actually, had three. Let's do the first one. What happens to my FERS annuity supplement if I were to pass away between 56 and 62? Does my wife get it? If so, does she get the entire amount? Since there is no beneficiary form for this specific piece of the retirement pie, what determines the beneficiary designation? Got those, John? Or do you want me to do them slower?
No, I understand. She will not get his supplement. If she meets certain conditions, she will get a supplement, one of which, as I recall, is if she has to be eligible for a Social Security widow's benefit at 60. There are three others, and unfortunately I didn't get this while I was at home, or I could have ticked off the other three. But if this person can email me, he can email me at nitpinc.com.
We'll do that again.
nitpinc.com.
Right.
Hit contact. The question will probably come to me. And I would have the other three criteria at my fingertips were I sitting in my home office. But I'm not. I'm at a radio station. But chances are she will get a supplement, but it's an entirely different formula than the one that calculates your supplement. So it's entirely possible.
Okay. Now, the next question, and by the way, the person that sent this in, they should preface question to John.
You can go directly to J. Elliott, two L's, two T's, at nitpinc.com.
Okay.
So, okay. And I'll answer it.
Question two might be a little bit more on my side of the table. Does the TSP's minimum required distribution, oftentimes called MRD, minimum required distribution, calculation actually suffice for one of the three IRS rules, for penalty-free distributions. Is 116 years of age the actual age one must use in the minimum required distribution? So let's go back to the first question. The emailer abused it's actually the IRS code section, but people have called these things the 72T rules. It's IRS code section 72T. And if one was to retire earlier than what the penalty provision would be, people would say, gee, I can't touch my TSP, I can't touch my IRA because I'm not of age. And the military, law enforcement, and whatnot that retire early said, now, what about us? We can't touch it, but it's because we had to retire. So Congress passed these this IRS code section. And one of them is pretty easy. There are three ways to make the calculation. One way is to say, all righty, let's take a life expectancy of X. And in this case, one of them is 116 years. And if you agree to take it out based on this pretty simple formula, then you would be able to get the money penalty free. You would have to pay income tax on it, but you have to stay on it for at least 5 years or until you hit 59 and a half, whichever is later. So somebody retiring in their late 40s, say law enforcement type, could do this, but they'd have to do it. It wouldn't be 5 years. It would have to be whatever the delta was between retirement and 59 and a half. Okay, that's one of the two and one of the three. I won't even try to explain the other three, the other two, because you need a computer to do it. There is a website, oddly enough, named 72T. So if you just go and Google 72T, there's one that'll make the calculation, and it uses interest rates at the time that you retire. So it says you may, in fact, be able to get more money than what the small amount would be if you used that long life expectancy. Have the same rules. You'd have to stay on it for at least 5 years or until you hit 59 and a half. So then you have to ask yourself, am I going to do this? Because if I do it, I'm locked into doing it till whatever that time period is. And if I may go to a second career, I might not want to pull the trigger on this. Or I want to use the one that gives me the lease because I don't need the money. You know, usually you're doing it because you need the money. But if you go to a second career, you might not need to tap that source. And oftentimes that's the best source to keep untapped until you've used up the other money. I hope I haven't confused people with that. But remember, there's three ways to do it. One is this long life expectancy, and the other two would require a computer that you can easily find. Google 72T, not T-E, just the letter T. Okay, and then we've got a third question. Say I'm subject to the 10% penalty for the early TSP distribution. In other words, they left federal service before 55, before the year in which they turned 55, and they were taking the money out, and they didn't want to do the 72 Ts, and they were going to pay the 10% penalty. If my income tax rate, after deductions and exemptions were applied, is it effectively zero? Depends on how much you take out. I mean, if you don't take out much, it may be zero, but you'd still pay the penalty. Interesting. So you might not pay any income tax if the amount distributed was small. And actually, if it's a FERS retirement, Social Security is taxed at three different levels. One is zero. And if the income is very modest, you might be able to get some Social Security income as well as a small distribution from this, and there wouldn't be any income tax. But again, you would pay the penalty on the TSP part and or the traditional IRA distribution. Alrighty, so is it effectively zero? And I could actually be at zero even if I made more income. That's where this is a very good question. It's unfortunately very technical, and it will make your hair hurt trying to figure it out. In other words, from zero income to a certain amount, you'd be in a zero tax bracket. But if you went $1 over it, it's almost like it jumps up in the bracket, and it impacts your Social Security, which goes from zero to all of a sudden being 50% taxable. So you need to study this one, and I wouldn't even try to explain that one because it's got too many numbers in it. And then the last comment, basically, is a higher tax rate or is it a higher tax rate or is it truly just a penalty that disregards all the other variables? And the answer is yes. If you're just looking at the penalty and you had the least amount of money possible, but that money came from a penalty source, you're paying the penalty. You might not pay any income tax, but you will pay the penalty. But as you progress you know, you have to live on something. And it's probably not going to be on that amount that would escape the income tax. So there's going to have to probably be some other money. And then you start this multiplying effect with the taxation of Social Security that was sacrosanct prior to that. And I'm sure I put everybody to sleep with that one. But I didn't ask the question, but I do get questions like this. And you try to explain that in class. And actually, I have a little chart for it in class, and it makes it more palatable. Anyway, let's get back to yours, Michael. And thanks for the email for the individual. I never use names. Very good questions. Very, very deep. So let's get back to Michael's deep and John's deep. So where were we before I got off on all this tax stuff and penalty? We were talking about, you know, somebody in the glide path into retirement. It could be even mid-career. What am I going to do? I like my job, or I'm pre-retirement, and I'm getting a little frustrated with the finances and the like, or the threat of what may or may not happen. So I'm going to stay a little bit longer, but I really wanted to do this, but I can't do two full-time jobs. And I take that test. What was that website again? That
www.livecareer.com.
Okay. And you know, I've asked some other folks in your position, and I've always wanted to play for the NBA. And when I say that, they all look at me like the cat that dragged in the dead mouse. You know, you, first of all, playing basketball, and second, at your age, playing the NBA. And I go, well, you know, I can dream. So let's ignore that and say, I really want to do something else. And this might help us take that test, huh?
I think so. And one other point, too, along with that, is that, you know, there are lots of opportunities to volunteer. And people ask me about volunteering from time to time. And I always tell them that here's kind of the rule of thumb. So you don't choose just anything to do. There are lots of worthy activities that one can contribute their time to, from working in a soup kitchen to volunteering at Leisure World to help people with their taxes and so forth. So there are lots of things to do. Now, I think the real important question to answer is, what kind of person are you? If you know the answer to that question, I'm going to give you four choices in a moment. But if you know the answer to that question, then my advice has solidly been, choose something that matches who you are, rather than just saying, well, okay, they need some help with the disaster thing, and you get down there and you're folding tarpaulins and thinking to yourself, okay, but I'm an ace accountant. I could be working on the finances of this. Okay, you didn't ask. That's because you didn't ask the question in advance. So here are the four types to put ourselves in. And I'm sorry that some people will say, oh, Lord, there goes psychologists again trying to put us into boxes. And there are, but these are, and I apologize, but that is necessary in order for us to make some decisions.
Actually, you're trying to keep us out of a box.
I'm trying to keep us out of as long as possible. And then eventually, there you are. That's a happy day for somebody, just not you. Anyhow, so the four boxes of style, they're called style indicators. The first one is the easiest one for me to describe, which is a social. If you're a social person, then you're like me. I'm a social person. Social people love being with other people. They enjoy meeting new people. They enjoy talking, an exchange of ideas. They really like that kind of thing. They like getting to a personal level with others. They want to hear about people's families and their lives and so forth. That's a social person. The drawback of social people is that we generally have a very high tolerance for ambiguity. So we're the people that have probably frustrated many other styles, the other styles, over the years, because we can have a conversation, come to no conclusion about some topic, and the socials are perfectly fine with that. We don't need an answer to things. We enjoy the questions. We don't care that much about the answers to things, unless it's how will I get home tonight or something like that. But even then, we are the people that will leave it up to chance. So that's number one. Are you a social person? Question number two, are you what's called an options person? Now, these are your creative types. These are the people that have gone into work in public affairs, those kind of things. They are people who have ideas, and they're constantly, and they're not afraid to say an idea, even if it's contrary to the conversation or it goes against what in a group others are talking about. They always have a new idea. These are wonderful people because they always see the world through a different lens than everybody else. And if you're one of those kind of people, you know that about yourself. You know that you constantly come up with ideas. The third kind of person is a detailed person. You knew I'd get to that because, Bob, that would be you. A detailed person generally will go into accounting, financial analysis, those kinds of things, where the minutia, the detail, they find interesting. And one thing I will tell everyone, if you have friends or enemies who are detailed people, here's the key. They will never get enough detail. There isn't enough to ever satisfy them.
For those of you all listening, I might tell you something, and you're going to be surprised at this. I'm somewhat of a shy person.
Well, really. Shy goes along with...
Somewhat.
With that one.
I went to a party Saturday afternoon, early evening, a St. Patty's Day party. I didn't know but four people there. I had one of the best times in recent memory talking to all these different people about what they do and what, and none of them did what I did, heavens forbid. But the way I got into what I did, again, being shy, I graduated in 69, 70, and there were no jobs. It was somewhat like a few years ago. And I went to work in a tax mill, and we just pounded out tax returns. But what I liked about it is I could understand it, but I could bring it in, I could speak English to people instead of taxes. And a lot of accountants can't explain it in terms that people understand it. So that's the social side, and it's kind of fun because then somebody says, now I get it, like that 72T stuff. If you read that, you just done, I'll pay the penalty. It'll be just fine with me. Public speaking, I would drop courses. And then I was forced to do it by, I'll use his name, Jim McCarthy. I'll go to my grave thanking that man. And he threw me in front of 30 people and walked out of the room. He knew more about taxes than most people. And then he put me in front of 60 accountants and left the whole day. And then I learned it. And I said, this is fun. Anyway.
Great.
And so I kind of learned it the other way around.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Well, understand, and I would want all the listeners to understand, that every human being has all four as a potential inside. We already have that. But one of these four is what's called our dominant style. It's how we ordinarily will behave. And the fourth one of the three, social, options, and detail, the fourth one is closure. People of closure. People who are closure people are people who need an answer to everything, and they need it now. They don't have time for discussion or dialogue. They want an answer to things, and they want it now. And usually it's the answer that they will create for whatever it is.
Are these people also called attorneys?
They might fall into that category very often. And they can be very helpful to the rest of us, the other three of us, because they are the people who will get us to move and quickly make decisions and so forth. Now, here's my point. Whichever of those four we are, and there's a website, Personalysis, PersonalySis, personalysis.com, where one can go and take a test if they want to find out which of the four, if you're not sure, you fall into. But here's why it matters which one you are. When, particularly in the first 5 to 10 years after we retire, I was going to say graduate, after we retire, During that period of time, usually when our health is at its is at the peak it's going to be, it's before deterioration begins. I'm sorry that that's the technical word, but well, actually, I'm not. It is the word. And so, but in those years, whatever we choose to do, my advice is make it something that's compatible with which of the boxes you're in. So for somebody like me, if all I did was sit and write books, I'd go crazy because I'm a social person. That's why I added on, but I have to be out amongst the people. And so here I am doing workshops for NITP and others to get that social side of myself out there. And I think that the more we can do that, the more we will be happy with our decisions in retirement, and particularly when it comes to the things we're not being paid for, those things we volunteer for. Volunteer for the things that equal who you are.
Okay, we've got about a minute and a half left. Let's do your website again, because it's just one.
Sure.
A great website, but it's got a great name.
www.mybestdayistoday.com. And those out there who remember their Latin will notice that the name of my business is Carpe Diem, which is the same thing in Latin. It means seize the day.
Latin, huh? Okay. Thanks, Michael. It was captivating. John and I are just sitting there listening the whole show, which is rare for both of us, I think. John, final thoughts? You've done it. Enjoyed it?
Well, as Michael has spent an hour pointing out, the decision when to retire is not just financial. It is certainly that, but it is also what am I going to do and have a plan going forward, like what you're going to do, how you're going to spend your time, and you'll be better off.
Okay, great. Thanks for listening. We'll be on next week, and I believe it's going to be James Marshall, Tammy, and maybe Bob Braunstein, and it's kind of like Tales from the Way Out. Anyway, thanks for listening. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye. I'm getting the high sign.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Government IT acquisition professionals find innovative solutions for a cost-cutting era at Acquisition Excellence, March 21st at the Grand Hyatt Downtown. Join over 500 government and industry peers to learn about acquisition, innovation, and workforce empowerment. GSA and the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council host this education and training event. Register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Look for the Acquisition Excellence link on our events page.